everybody, and welcome to the Bros and Consoles Podcast mini-series Solo Gaming Updates, episode 33. I am coming to you on December 26th, a little bit later than I thought I was going to be getting this out there, but a very merry belated Christmas to everybody out there. And even people who are not celebrating it, that's fine too. You know, I hope you guys had a good holiday time as well, you know? I am, of course, one half of your host, Nathan Choquette, coming to you with the last episode of 2020. We finally made it, everybody. We've got another, what is that? Oh my gosh, I'm just looking at the clock now. We have another, 6 days before the new year starts, or I guess 5 days before the new year starts. Man, time is going so, so fast now, but we're almost there, almost over the hill, the horrible hill that is 2020. And I'm coming to you guys this week with a little bit of a different kind of episode, kind of like I talked about on the previous episode. Going to be going over a little bit of things that kind of happened in this year in terms of games that I got to play and experiences that really kind of left an impact on me and whatnot. So I wasn't sure entirely of how I was going to kind of structure it and what type of lists I wanted to make, because y'all know I love my lists, but I had to try to make it a little bit concise and figure out exactly what I wanted to do. I could have done something that was the top five, top 10 games of 2020 kind of thing, or I could have done a whole bunch of other things. And in the end, I decided, it's all about kind of the things that you experience throughout the year rather than just the ones that came out during that year. Because, for some people who have horrendous backlogs like I do, you have a lot of games in there that are amazing and worth talking about and, rank up there pretty highly in the year that you play them. But it just depends on when you get to them. So they kind of get left out of that conversation if it's just about the things that came out this year. So I ended up deciding on doing kind of my top 8 gaming experiences from 2020, and it's not in a particular order. I think the way I kind of structured it was I have a few of the heavy hitters first, more like AAA titles, and then moving on to more of the indie stuff towards the end. But yeah, let's just go ahead and jump into there. So just for people who are listening, I'm not going to do any, or I'm going to attempt to leave out as many kind of spoilerific things as I can. I don't want to, I find when I listen to podcasts and stuff, if spoilers start to be talked about and it's still relatively soon as to when the games came out and stuff, such as we'll spoil a little bit of the first one, Spider-Man Miles Morales. Since that game just recently came out, for people who haven't had a chance to pick it up yet or haven't had a chance to play through it all the way, I don't want to make it so that they have to, figure out when to re-listen to the podcast or just kind of stop listening for the moment until they beat it later on. So what I'll do is I'm going to try and keep this as spoiler-free as possible. I will probably be mentioning some of the things that did make me, more emotional and stuff for certain things. And hopefully those things aren't too spoilery, but yeah, we'll kind of play things by ear. Hopefully we'll see how everything goes. If I do think I'm going to say something that is more on the spoilery side, I'll try and give you guys a warning ahead of time, but yeah, we'll see as we get to things. For older titles, I am going to say that spoiler rules are maybe a little bit more off the table. I'll probably be a little bit more lax with that because of things that, they've had some time out and everything. So, and I think if it's not super story heavy, then it's not, or if it's a game that people aren't playing necessarily for the story, I'd say, then I won't worry too much about it, but I'll give people warning ahead of time as well for that. But let's go ahead and start off with, I did, like I said, as a top 8 gaming experiences from this year. I'm going to start off with the first one that I mentioned already, Spider-Man Miles Morales. And I think from a few episodes ago when I talked about beating / platinuming the game finally, I had mentioned that this game struck me on kind of multiple levels in terms of just regular things, like the gameplay is super tight. Swinging around the city has always felt good, but switching over from, remembering playing through Spider-Man on the PS4 and then going over to this game, the essential sequel, right? Or side story sequel kind of thing. Going on to there and being able to choose between the fidelity and performance modes, and being able to play the game in 60 frames per second and watching kind of the movement be so different looking compared to what I was looking at on the, you know, lesser version. It's really amazing and kind of seeing what the difference is just visually wise. I know that certain things I think back then had, you know, been removed so that the thing would perform at that kind of frame rate, but it sounds like I've heard that basically now there is a patch that should allow you to play the game at 60 frames per second, as well as still having the things like ray tracing and stuff like that in there, which I think that was kind of originally why I had it on the lower frame rate version, just because it had ray tracing and I was like, oh, you know, I've been wanting to see what this ray tracing is all about, let's play it like this. But then changing it over eventually to that and seeing the difference in the movement of Miles was pretty stirring for me and like my eyes, right? That's a weird way to put it, but it was really amazing kind of seeing the difference. And then after that I was realizing I can't go back. There's nothing to go back to in terms of there. I'm not missing out that much on seeing Spider-Man's reflection, or sorry, Miles's reflection. Yeah, he's Spider-Man too. Seeing the reflection in the buildings as I pass them by and stuff, because I noticed that was one of the things that was different going from the two different modes, is that with the ray tracing in there, you could see his reflection kind of as you were moving past buildings, which is really cool. And then in the performance mode, I think is what it was, with the 60 frames per second, they did take that reflection piece out, but his movement just looked way more smooth. So I ended up finishing the game with that on there. And, you know, I'm not sure how the PS4 version will perform. I'm not sure if that's something that can make use of the whole like performance with ray tracing and stuff in there. But if I find out that it does work for that on PS4, I may go back to the PS4 and play that on there as well eventually. But it's going to be a long time from now, because I think it's a very special game. Like I mentioned, not just the gameplay, but story-wise, I think there's areas where I think things are predictable. There's areas where I think like some story beats, I think there's one kind of major story turn in the beginning that I hadn't gotten to yet, and it's a point in like an actual like trailer that was one of the later trailers to come out for the game. It was a part of that trailer there, for people who have seen the trailers, it's like the bridge scene and stuff, right? Inside there, though, there was a thing in the trailer that was left out in order to, you know, make it more of a surprise, like in the game and whatnot. And I think before I'd hit that point, I knew it was going to be coming up eventually, but before I hit that point, I was playing the game, and then I think had left to go, I think, to like dinner or something like that with some family members, and realized that, you know, I was making my way towards there, and I, you know, had started to put things together in terms of like, oh, like characters and whatnot that are appearing. I had started to realize like, oh no, like, are they gonna do this like specific thing? Are they gonna make this character like a bad guy kind of thing? And turns out that when I did finally get to that scene and it actually showed the stuff, I was like, oh yeah, they totally did it. But I think because I had already thought about it, the shock of it was less, you know, less impactful at the time. But I did have that moment beforehand, because I was like, oh, you know, I really like these like characters they're introducing, and I can't believe that they're going to possibly make one of them a bad guy. And when they did, I was just like, this is what I figured was going to happen, but it still kind of stung a little bit, you know. But yeah, going through that entire story, like all the way to the ride to the end, and then kind of the emotional pieces in there and stuff, you get to really see Miles's range as like a character within that universe. And it's definitely, I'll probably say this quite a bit, it's definitely a ride kind of getting from like the start point A to finishing everything up at point B, and everything in between was very much worth the wait for this game. And I'm very excited for whenever the next Spider-Man game does come out. It will probably most likely be getting back to a Peter story, but I wouldn't be surprised if at this point, you know, because, you know, they have you playing as both characters in the different games, I wouldn't be surprised at this point if Insomniac does decide to basically just go ahead and put both characters in the game, and maybe you're switching back and forth between them for different missions and things. Because, you know, in the original Spider-Man game for PS4, you did play as Miles at a certain point, right, in there. You got to meet Miles and whatnot. And I wouldn't be surprised if you basically end up playing as both of them now, because it's essentially the same type of gameplay, but with different abilities and whatnot. And I think that would be a really cool way to kind of tie everything together. So make it seem like it's more of a universe rather than kind of separate additions, or not additions, separate like parts of like different of the same New York City that you're swinging around in. You know, it'd be very cool to kind of have the two things kind of collide into one game, especially for kind of the stuff they're building up at the moment. But we'll talk more about all those things as we kind of learn more about the next Spider-Man game, I'm sure. Other than that, the second one I have on the list was Ghost of Tsushima. That one, I think, was a very, very cool experience playing through entirely. One, because the fighting and the combat in there is pretty fantastic for, I think, what people and myself had been hoping for from a type of, like, samurai game. And samurai mixed with kind of, like, stealth gameplay as well. So you have the ghost option once you start kind of really diving into that skill tree set. But going through that game and kind of seeing Jin's your main character's evolution as a, you know, as a person throughout that game, because in the beginning he's essentially a, you know, like a vassal for a lord or a samurai master, basically. And as you're kind of, you know, seeing him evolve from that kind of more like timid, more like order following samurai to, you know, this really powerful samurai that is basically one of the last, like, people keeping things, like, in order on the island and stuff, and kind of rebelling against the Mongols and everything. It was a really cool kind of transformation to see, like, him step out of his uncle's shadow. His uncle was the lord that he served under and whatnot, right? But it's cool to see him, you know, go from being this kind of, like, person who's, like, following orders and really just kind of seemingly more on, like, the timid side and stuff. Obviously, he's still, like, brave and a warrior and everything, but seeing him go from kind of that more, like, I guess, like, a submissive personality to one who's very, like, assertive, and he knows that he has to go and do things because, you know, there's basically no one else that can do this stuff. And it's really cool to see that transformation over time. It's also really fascinating to watch his, I guess what you'd say, like, kind of his, like, mental idea or mental, I don't have the word in my head. Seeing, like, the choices that he has to make and kind of the consequences of those choices is a really fascinating part of the story as well. There are certain areas there in the story where things happen pretty quickly, and I kind of question, like, how would they have gotten to figure out that this is exactly what they would use so that they could turn, like, some of the tools that Jin uses against him, basically. So, like, yeah, it's like Jin discovers some tools he can use against the Mongols, and then immediately, like, story-wise, pretty soon after that, they have that new tool and they're now using it against him and everything. So it's interesting seeing kind of how quickly that happens. And I think some of those parts maybe felt a little, you know, they felt maybe a little bit rushed in a weird way, in terms of, like, it didn't feel as if, I guess, like, time-wise, because everything has happened so quickly and whatnot, it didn't feel as if they would have figured that out immediately. But I guess I maybe was kind of also thinking of it as if, like, the Mongols at that time weren't, like, savvy enough to kind of figure these things out. But what's it called? The Khan, basically, the main villain in the story that you're up against, he is a very smart character. I'm kind of talking through these things now as I'm thinking about it. But because he's such a smart character, I guess now in hindsight, I could see how they would get use of those tools so quickly and whatnot. But seeing the moral choices that Jin has to kind of choose between and stuff, and eventually kind of, like, ending up at the place that I did at the end of the game, because there are a couple different options and whatnot, but getting to that point and kind of, you know, seeing the entire, like, completion of Jin's character and his, you know, awakened personality is what I'll call it, kind of thing, was really a spectacular I guess, high note for me around like the middle of the year. So very, very cool to go through all that. And I recommend, I mean, obviously all these games on this list, I think I recommend to anybody who's interested in these things at all. The third one I'm going to mention is Final Fantasy VII Remake. Now, to give people a backstory, I am not someone who has played the majority of the Final Fantasy games. I have always kind of heard great things about them. I know people have very strong opinions about different entries and whatnot. And I think I own the majority of the Final Fantasy games, now that I think about it. Let me think. I for sure have 1 through 6. And those are all available, I think, on my... I think I can play through the majority of those on the Vita. Some of them are, like, PS1 classic kind of things. And then that basically means I can play them on the Vita or on the PS3 and whatnot. But I have those ones. I also have 7, 8, 9, 10, and 10-2. And those are all, I think, available on the PS4 through, like, remastered versions and whatnot. And then I think I also have, 15 is on the PS4 as well. That's just the regular version. And 13, 1, 2, and number 3 as well, Lightning Returns. Or is it Lightning Returns? Yeah, something like that. But yeah, so basically I have so many of these things available. Now it's just about like the time to actually go through and play these things. But I don't really, I started playing like a few different ones, and usually I end up kind of like falling off somewhere, right? But going through Final Fantasy VII Remake, because it's such a different style of game, I guess more akin to Final Fantasy XV, which I haven't played too much of, but because it's such a different style compared to kind of previous entries where they're very heavily, you know, like turn-based RPG games, it was easier to stay in it, and then also just kind of the world and the characters were grabbing me more, seeing them in kind of a, you know, updated way in terms of the way that everything now is like 3D and high definition and all this stuff. Kind of seeing all those things, I stuck with the game and ended up finishing it, I think, relatively quickly, around like the time that it came out. And man, I think for a long time this year, it was my favorite game of this year. Those things changed later on as other things started to come out, like Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and Ghost of Tsushima. But going through that entire experience and then eventually finding out about how things in the game have differed compared to the actual Final Fantasy VII was pretty interesting. And I really love these kind of like alternate universe kind of theories and whatnot. Obviously, I think these things have not been like specifically determined and whatnot. We're gonna have to find out once the next series or the next game in this like entry kind of comes out, which, because they're working on Final Fantasy 16 as well, who knows when we're actually gonna get news on the sequel to the Final Fantasy 7 remake. But definitely, if people are fans of the Final Fantasy games, as well as people that are not fans, which I would throw myself in with the non-fans, because even though I have these games, I've never really stuck around for all of them. But clearly, there are some really amazing things in here that outshine some of the like pitfalls in the game as well. And I think that's why it eventually fell in terms of like favorite games of this year, because there is a very slow section in there, which, you know, funny enough, I think is the same slow section that made me fall off of the original Final Fantasy VII. I'm specifically talking about when your character Cloud meets Aerith, and man, that section in the original game was way, way smaller than it was in the remake. And the remake just somehow made it drag on forever. It was crazy how long that thing seemed to drag on. But, you know, eventually getting past that and getting back into kind of like the heart of what this game was, which was this, you know, action-packed, fast-paced, lots of things happening, story experience, getting through to that part again was what made the game, you know, exceptional. And so I do still have to go back to, I think, finish the game on hard. I think that way I can finish like platinuming the game as well. I think the one thing that's going to deter me and make it make me wait a little bit longer for that platinum is because there is the trophy in there about getting all the different outfits for Cloud when you get to the I was gonna say the city name, but I think I forgot. It's the city where Don Corneo is at. I wanted to call it Night City for a second, but that's not it at all. It is a cyberpunk thing. But yeah, it's like once I have to get like all three of those things, it means I'm essentially gonna have to do kind of multiple playthroughs, and that's gonna be a little bit more of like an annoying thing to get, but still doable. So I'll eventually hopefully get to that part. But moving on from there, number four that I have on this list is actually a game that came out a while ago called Neo. And I finally got around to, you know, really diving into Neo this year. And for a long while, I was playing that game for a long while. And I think total time-wise, it's probably like 100 plus hours now. It's pretty rare nowadays that I get to go into a game and play it for over 100 hours. And the fact that this one kept me engaged that whole time, I think, is a testament to how amazing that game is. The main thing in there is like the combat is, as far as kind of like Souls-like games go, the combat is like flawless, it feels like. And kind of the ability to change between different weapons, and they all have different skill trees, I think that really made things stand out as well. I think originally when I started playing the game, I wanted to play it as a kind of like, dual sword wielder kind of thing, where I had the twin blades rather than just like one sword or some of the other options they have, like axes and spears, things like that. I wanted to play it with the twin swords there, be a Nitoryu user, basically, for people who have like One Piece references. But aside from that, because I was playing that originally and it wasn't quite like sticking like I wanted it to, like it didn't feel as satisfying as I was hoping it was going to feel, and ended up eventually starting to use more of the Kusarigama, which is a chain scythe kind of weapon. It was weird kind of going into that, and that was what I was playing with and what I felt like I was good at the time. And eventually I kind of like fell off a little bit. I think I had beaten the first area a long while ago, and then at the time wasn't feeling like playing more at the time, so switched to something else and eventually got back to it this year. But I eventually found that my weapon of choice was the single katana style. And not even like the large katanas, the dai katanas, but the original like one blade style was, I think, my favorite for quite a while in this game. And as I continued through the levels and things and started to unlock more and more skills, I started to realize that, you know, it's okay to, or I was having an easier time switching between a whole bunch of different weapons, just depending on kind of the enemies I was fighting against, as well as the, what's called, the gear I had at the time as well. And kind of realizing that there's this real fluidity between the different weapons that you have, and as well as the different stances you can take. Like, they really dove in and made this game very intricate compared to other Souls-type games. And this one seemed to just have everything that I wanted in there. I think at the moment, this is probably one of my favorite Souls-type games, which is funny because it's not even, you know, directly made from like from software and the people who created the Souls genre. But very, very cool in terms of gameplay, customization, as well as story, because there's the whole, you know, like samurai feudal lords kind of war going on. And as you're kind of learning more about these different characters and everything in story scenes, it's really cool as they're kind of building this background lore. And by the time you get to the end of the game, and I'll kind of say Neo is when I'm a little bit loose with the spoilers for and stuff, so here's your warning here. By the end of the game, once you finally reach the end and whatnot, and kind of defeat the final bosses, you have this really cool like moment where you're basically kind of like the most revered samurai on like in Japan at the time. And it's weird, for one, because I think that was one of the things originally that felt weird, was because your character is a white guy with full white hair. And his name is William, and he's not even like Japanese at all, right? But he, over time, has kind of throughout these levels and whatnot, and his progression in the story, he's become this like feared samurai warrior. So much so that like at the end of the game, the game's not super heavy in the story in terms of like, oh, like you have no idea what's going to happen kind of thing. But by the end of the game, when you've defeated the final bosses and whatnot, I think you're watching a story cutscene, and basically the lord that you were kind of working with is ordering some of your friends to go and, you know, assassinate William, your character. And they eventually decide to, you know what, we're just going to say that we did, and then you just leave and don't come back kind of thing, because they don't want to turn against you. And also just like it's the idea that you've become so powerful over time and helped these people, you know, end these like this warring states period. But you've now become the like newest threat for them, essentially, if they're worried about you possibly like taking over and stuff. They're now like fearful and being like, okay, we got to take out William before he, you know, decides he wants to stay and keep Japan kind of thing. So it's a really interesting kind of story changes and whatnot there. But I'm very interested in going and playing through Neo 2. The only reason I haven't gone through now at this point is because they have Neo 1 and 2 coming out on the PS5. They're going to have PS5 versions. And I'll have to see when those do come out. I do believe they're supposed to be coming out, I think, in February or March of 2021. And from the things that they've talked about so far, it sounds like if you own the PS4 versions, you will have access to the PS5 versions as well. I don't know if they're going to be separate trophy lists or not, because, you know, if that does happen, for one, I'd be interested in going back through it, even if it doesn't pop everything for me. But two, it is going to be a huge time sink going and doing that. So we'll have to kind of see what happens there. But at the moment, I'm waiting for the PS5 versions, basically, to go and play Neo 2 on there. But maybe I'll have a change of heart and end up playing it during the downtime that we'll be having lately. But, you know, now that we know that those two things are coming in hot next year, that I'm going to be waiting around for those. And I think some of my like personal gaming goals will kind of have to do with like larger games next year, but we'll get more into that kind of in 2021 itself. Moving on, that's kind of the last of the AAA releases that I'll be talking about here. These are more of the kind of more indie titles and whatnot. I'm going to start with one that, you know, is from a first party studio, for Sony, but is more of a like smaller, package experience and whatnot. And that is Astro's Playroom. That one, I think I've talked about a bit on the podcast and whatnot, but you know, this year's been, I'll get real with you guys for a bit here. This year's been rough, you know, like it's had a lot of ups and downs, and I think sometimes more downs than ups. But the nice thing about having, you know, video games as a hobby kind of thing is being able to get these experiences that you either like didn't know were coming or didn't know that you would experience in that way kind of thing. And Astro's Playroom, I think, was one of those ones for me where, you know, really sitting down and getting to play through the entire thing. I know that my like history with Sony consoles and whatnot isn't as like vast as some people might be, because some people have, you know, had all the different consoles and things, and maybe even had all the different peripherals and whatnot that came with different consoles or that you had to buy separately. But because of my time listening to other PlayStation podcasts starting back in 2013, I think, I've really gotten to know like a lot of different devices that had to do with the PlayStation ecosystem. And it's, I think that was kind of what helped me have this almost like, I don't really have like a word for it. It's almost like a weird false nostalgia, I guess, where I never owned a bunch of these things that I'm seeing in Astro's Playroom. And I'm talking specifically about the artifacts that you can find. Sorry if there's a little bing there. I had some kind of notification from Game Pass on my computer. But the different artifacts you find throughout Astro's Playroom, they're all collectibles and whatnot, and they're all optional. But if you want to get the platinum trophy, it's all that you need there, or that's what you need for the platinum, I should say. But in the four different main worlds that they have, there's the Memory Meadows, they have the SSD Speedway, Cooling Springs, and GPU Jungle, I believe. If I got those names wrong, feel free to correct me at brosandconsoles@gmail.com. But going through all those different areas and kind of finding the different collectibles, the artifacts and whatnot, it was weird because I have this false nostalgia because I know what all these things are, and then some of them I've never like played around with or even like owned and stuff. But seeing all the different things from PlayStation Past and whatnot was really like a weird trip down memory lane. And some of those memories aren't even like memories of me playing these things. It's me like hearing like people that I really love listening to podcast wise and stuff, such as like Podcast Beyond in the past, right? Hearing them kind of talking about these different devices and stuff, and kind of it almost feels like I was kind of like right there with those devices. It's a weird kind of like false memory type of thing. But actually going and seeing all the different artifacts popping up, things like the PlayStation Eye for the PS3, or the Move wands and stuff from that generation, all the way up to like ridiculous things like the camera nowadays and the PSVR, and stuff like way in the past like the PSP Go, and all these different things that I've heard about and have never really like seen or held in my hands and stuff, but seeing them on the big screen and kind of knowing about them gave me this kind of like warm, like, oh my gosh, this is so cool kind of feeling that I think people who, you know, did own these objects and did like come from these generations and whatnot, they probably felt way more deeply than I did. But it was cool kind of knowing about these things and getting to see all these different things from PlayStation Past, along with the other type of collectible in there, which are the jigsaw pieces, and eventually getting all of those puzzle pieces and seeing them in, I don't know if I'm getting too spoilery here, but basically when you get the puzzle pieces, they get put into a giant collage that's available in the area that they call the PlayStation Labo kind of thing. I assume that must be like a weird, you know, like Nintendo lab, or I don't know, wait, is it PlayStation Lab or PlayStation Labo? I don't know. That might be something I have to correct later on. But you get the area where basically you have all the artifacts on display and whatnot, right? And seeing the puzzle pieces kind of fitted into this giant mural on the wall that goes around like the majority of this room that you're in was really cool, because they also in the picture kind of show you over time kind of like the different devices and kind of like when they appeared in Sony's timeline and whatnot. And then kind of the different, it's so hard to describe without like, you know, going into kind of like what the pictures look like and stuff, but it's almost like it kind of shows you the story of like Sony and being like, oh, you know, we have this idea for these really cool things. So let's start off with this here. And then, oh, that kind of leads us along the path from like PS1 to PS2. Then you get from there over to things like the PSP and eventually like the PS3 and the Vita and all these different devices and stuff. But it's almost like you get to kind of watch as their, I guess like the light bulbs were going off in their heads of like, man, this would be a really cool thing to have in the next like iteration of PlayStation and whatnot. But seeing the changes over time like that is a really cool thing. And, you know, Astrobot himself is just a really fun character. He's kind of very like zany and cute and whatnot. And this was a type of experience that I think was really needed, you know, because the years, like I said, the year's been rough. And getting this coming with the PS5 and whatnot, and getting to kind of play through that entire thing is something that's, I think it has been talked about quite a bit by a bunch of different people in the industry, but it may not have quite sunk in all the way for people that are more just like casual gamers and stuff. But people that do get a PS5 and have not checked out the free game that is Astro's Playroom, definitely go through and play it, because even if it's not something that you're super into the Sony universe and know about these different devices and whatnot, it's still a really tight platformer. It's got really cool like speedrun options if you go and visit the speedrun portion of the game there. And then just kind of going through and seeing the different uses for the DualSense was also just a really cool highlight that they have here that I think Team Asobi has done an amazing job with. And they seem like they always do really good work in terms of kind of like these smaller first party experiences. And I'm very much excited to see what happens next with Astro and whatnot. Hopefully we'll hear about that soon, but it could be a little while still. So we'll kind of just hold out hope for the time being. I'm going to go ahead and talk about the last three on here, and they'll kind of be probably a little bit more quick. One of them I have on here is Celeste, which I got to finish up this year. For a while, I had known, and I'll be a little bit more loose with some of the spoiler kind of stuff here, but for a while, I had known that Celeste was, and this was because it was I think it's Matt Makes Games. That studio was in the Game Awards, and they won, I think, a few different awards for Celeste. One of them, I believe, was like Games for Impact kind of thing. And basically, the game is a story about kind of like battling through depression and stuff, which is not something before like hearing that on the Game Awards that I would have thought about, I think. But kind of knowing that the underlying story is essentially about that gave kind of an extra context to the game that I think really made it a special experience. And I'll never, like, since I can never go back and kind of like unhear those things, right, and experience the game fresh again, I'll never know if this is something that I would have grasped way back then, because sometimes I just kind of play through games and take them at face value. They're like, oh, this is a weird, like, because I think that's kind of how it's disguised, right? Is the game is about you climbing this mountain. It's called Celeste Mountain. And when at a certain part on the climb, you come across this kind of like darker version of yourself. And throughout the game, this darker version is kind of like messing things up for you a little bit. Sometimes the darker version is like directly coming after you and you have to avoid it and whatnot, or else it quote unquote, kills you kind of thing. You respawn immediately. Just have to get through those levels. But, there's times where the dark self is fighting you specifically, and there's times where your character kind of almost seemingly like, you know, lashes out at people around them because of this, you know, darker self, and then the dark self kind of, you know, taunts your character with it. The fact that they're kind of like ruining relationships with people around them and whatnot. But kind of seeing the course throughout the game that your character goes through, I know the character's name is Madeline, I believe. But it gives you the option to change it. So I played the game as Kaori. But basically, yeah, kind of going through the entire experience now, knowing about the underlying story of like fighting depression and whatnot, definitely changed the way the game felt. And maybe people who are going through without knowing that kind of stuff will just go through. And like I was saying, Celeste Mountain is supposed to be kind of a weirdly spiritual kind of place where like eerie things happen and people don't always know why. And so maybe like playing the game without hearing about these different game awards and stuff, I would have just thought that like, oh, the mountain is, you know, spiritual or weirdly cursed and stuff, and that's why you get to see like your inner demons. But it may not have had that same kind of like messaging in the back of my head until I had heard about it. But overall, the game itself, very, very fun. And story-wise, matches up, I'd say, like, pretty perfectly with the music that you're kind of going through as well. And I think that's kind of what makes the game very special. In the end, is that the music kind of has these direct, like, builds and swells and things as you're going through difficult portions or getting close to the peak of the mountain and whatnot. And that's kind of what really, you know, pushes the game into being an extremely, like, special experience. Whether you know about the underlying story, I don't know if motivations is the right word, but story implications and whatnot, or not. So that one, if you have not played Celeste, definitely go and pick it up. I think it is normally like $19.99 on full price, but I think at the moment it's part of the holiday deals sale as well on the PS4. So now might be a really great time to pick that up if you guys are interested in all in really tight platforming gameplay, but also like cool kind of haunting story in the background. I'm going to talk about the last couple games. I'm trying to think of which one I want to talk about first, because they're both really special in there. And I'm going to talk about I'll talk about Under Hero first, and I'll leave the last one for after that, because the last one is, I have not actually finished that game yet, but I'm hoping to finish it up relatively soon. I'm just not sure if I'm ready to go back to it yet or not. So I'll talk about Under Hero for a bit. Now, this is a game that I've talked about, I think, throughout the year at various times. I had a few like points in the game where, you know, like I think originally when I first got the game, was super excited about it, played through the entire thing, got to the end, and then realized that some trophies were glitched. I was a bit like, oh, that kind of sucks. We'll let time ride it out, and we'll see if we can eventually go back and platinum this game. Then eventually I was like, oh, cool, there's like a Discord on here. That was kind of the evidence of how into the game I was, is that I actually cared about making a Discord account and going on there just to be like, hey guys, like, you know, if these things are like bugged or whatnot, because the game was so new at the time, right? I had no idea if it was just me that was missing things or if there was actual things I couldn't get. And lo and behold, like, it was bugged. There were things that I couldn't get at the time. Those things were kind of fixed slowly over time, but even after some of the fixes that kind of got you into specific areas, like the what is that thing called? It's like a haunted maze in the second world. Getting inside there, I think, was one of the main bugs I encountered in the game the first time through. And I was just like, ah, okay, I'm just not going to be able to go through this and get all the stuff, so it's fine, whatever, I'll just keep going. And got to finish the game, and then eventually restarted because I'd heard a fix had happened for that section. So went through there, got the thing, and I was like, great, now I'm basically going to be able to get all of the collectibles and whatnot. It'll be fantastic. And then realized also at the time that there was no one who had the Platinum Trophy even after those fixes. And people are pretty quick as far as like trophies go to get through and kind of get all these things. But that one kind of was another flag for me where I was like, shoot, what else is going on here? And so played through the game again, found out that I was missing a specific collectible. And I think it was basically the last one that I needed to get the trophy and whatnot. And then on the Discord was kind of chatting with people, and I think asked about a specific, because I think people had referred me to a list of the collectibles and where they were specifically gotten from in the game, and whether that's like enemy drops or treasure chests, things like that. And so because I had kind of started this process of elimination, I figured out exactly which one I needed, and the one that I needed was a bug, unfortunately. But I think because in that Discord chat, I had mentioned some of the contents of World 4, and I want to say this is probably the reason that it happened, but because I think I mentioned a little bit of the contents of World 4, and that World 4 is kind of like a turning point for the story and where things get really, like, crazy in the game, because I mentioned a little bit of that, and I think it's considered, like, spoilery kind of stuff the stuff that I alluded to, basically, I was weirdly just kind of, like, banned from that Discord, and It was a weird experience because, you know, here on the one hand, it's this game I love so much, this developer that I'm just starting to get to know through this game, and then, you know, all of a sudden the Discord bans me, and I was reading through some of the rules and stuff and realizing that I think they have like a 3-strike policy where they're like, hey, like if you go and say this stuff, like it made it sound like basically we would, you know, kind of mute the, or I guess, like, maybe delete the comments and be like, hey, like, strike one, be careful, like, this is a non-spoiler territory kind of thing, which I think would be very understandable, but just got the ban hammer right away for whatever reason. So that one kind of, you know, left this, like, weird mark in terms of my, like, memories of the game community, I guess, in a way. But kind of putting those things aside, I have realized now that the game has been fixed. The bugs that were in there have now been fixed so that all the items are attainable. I do see that some people have the platinum, and that's kind of what tipped me off. Because I think for quite a while, when it wasn't attainable, I think I would periodically check in on Twitter just to see, like, hey, like, do we know if there's been kind of fixes for this? And I think at one point the developers, because the developers were very good about kind of responding back and whatnot via Twitter. I think they did mention at one point that the fix should be live, but when I tried to download it, it wasn't popping. And so they, I think they said they were going to look into it on the PS4 side. And I think I just never heard back about that fix, because I think it was like a month or two or longer before, you know, before I just realized, like, you know, like it's not working. I'm just going to have to put this to the side and maybe just write it off as a game that I'll never get the platinum trophy for because of bugs. But eventually, like towards the end of the year, maybe around like September or October, I saw that somebody had the platinum. And so then I knew, like, okay, like it's for real. Like it's workable now. And I am still going to go back and get that last thing because I want to complete it and whatnot. I don't know when I'm going to do it, but going specifically to the game experience, because I think the whole, that was, it was a weird kind of like long ride, right? Taking you on a long walk through this story here to kind of illustrate that even with all these like things on top that kind of, you know, sometimes I think can hamper like impressions of a, I guess like of things about the game, you know, that have nothing to do with the actual gameplay itself and whatnot. Because of those kinds of experiences, I think sometimes it can kind of, you know, hamper your enjoyment of a title and whatnot. I still have such a kind of like deep like amazement and enjoyment of Under Hero itself as a game that I think those things couldn't possibly like make me feel like less strongly about Under Hero and kind of the, yeah, it's going to sound weird and redundant because of the name of the title itself, but like the underratedness of this game is, I think, so wild because it's, you know, it's a indie title that I don't know if a lot of people really got their hands on and stuff. And it's such a shame because the game is, you know, it's kind of like this love letter to other things like Paper Mario and even things like Undertale and stuff with the humor style and everything in there. But the game takes these really cool concepts of basically you being a bad guy's minion and kind of like your minion being the hero of the game and whatnot after the you know, supposed hero was like killed. And that's in the very beginning of the game, not a spoiler at all. But, you know, kind of going through and seeing your character, you know, over time, like if you're just kind of playing the game and whatnot, it can probably feel a bit like flat. Maybe the dialogue options that you find from characters and stuff gets you like with a chuckle or something. But if you're not really looking into some of the different things that are in the game, you really miss quite a lot of like nuance that the game kind of takes story-wise. Some of those things being the journal system that you have. Now, I think for people that have been playing video games for a while and are pretty good at kind of remembering what your objectives are, you don't really need to access the journal system. I feel like it's really there for kind of these nuanced story bits, as well as kind of like to remind you of what you're looking for if you were to put the game down and come back to it maybe like a month later or something, right? But it's these really like cool nuanced story pieces in there that give the game a different tone as well, because in the beginning, your character is, you know, he's a minion, very low on the totem pole and whatnot. And apparently in there, the other minions don't even really like your character very much. They kind of think he's like a weirdo because he's so quiet, right? And as you kind of start to talk with the, you know, the mystical weapon that is Elizabeth the Fourth, I think. When you start to talk with Elizabeth after you get her from the hero's body, essentially. At first she's like, oh my gosh, like, what are you doing with me? And then when she realizes the hero is, you know, dead, she's like, oh my gosh, like, okay, the bad guys are coming. You have to hide me. Like, don't say anything, right? And so you hide her. You get taken back to the big baddie, the big bad boss, Mr. Stitches. And he's a zany bad guy character. And when he finds out that, you know, the hero has been, like, killed and whatnot, he goes and, like, strangles one of his other minions in the room that was the only other person who saw that you had killed the hero. And it seems like he's basically doing that to take credit for killing the hero and everything. As you continue through the story, though, you start to find out that there are really interesting kind of like levels to the, I guess, like the nefariousness of Mr. Stitches, as well as kind of like the developments in the story that really put the game on another level in terms of kind of like this backwards, it's like almost like a reverse hero tale, where normally in games, right, you're playing as the hero, you go after the bad guy, you defeat the bad guy, world is saved, right, or princess is saved. That's kind of one of the main like tenets for a lot of these stories, which this game is kind of directly putting into light in like a kind of satire kind of way. But because it's been kind of the normal story has been kind of flipped on its head, and now the hero is dead, you're a bad guy who's essentially returning all of these stones that the hero took from the original bosses, right? You're returning all these stones to them. You still go through and fight these bosses, but at the end of it, you just give them the stone. And it's kind of like, it's almost like a weird, like, what is the purpose of what we're doing right now, you know? But the sword, Elizabeth, she is basically kind of telling you, okay, we're going to go and defeat all these dudes, and then eventually you have to defeat Mr. Stitches because the hero is gone and there's no one else that can do it, right? Like, Mr. Stitches has to be stopped in order to, you know, stop his plans of destroying things, right? But as you're kind of going through, originally, your character is very, like, distrustful of seemingly, like, most people. He only really has motivations for, like, money and riches and stuff. And anytime those things are mentioned, like, your character does these, like, cute little animations where he, like, throws his hands in the air in excitement kind of thing. And when there's, like, scary stuff happening, he, like, crouches down and, like, cowers and holds his head and stuff. But your character never talks. He's a silent hero. And throughout the game, like, in the journal, you do see he's basically kind of, like, writing down things in the journal. And I think at one point, at one point when you find out about the journal, Elizabeth mentions, like, oh, hey, by the way, you know you can check the journal by pressing this thing, right? And I think she has some kind of remark on there, and she's like, no, of course I didn't read it. Not that much. And I'm just like, oh, there's these little funny pieces there. But actually going through and reading the journal entries, because the entries continue on whether you're looking at them or not, if you continue to look at the journal entries as you're kind of going through these different worlds with Elizabeth, there's a point in there, because originally your character is just kind of referring to her as like the sword or something like that. And eventually, like, he starts to actually write down her name in there, and I think starts to call her, like, oh, I'm trying to remember, Elizabeth. It might even be like Ellie or something like that. But he's basically, it's like he's got like a almost like a nickname in there for her now. And it's really, it's this kind of weird like turning point where I was kind of reading through these parts there and happened to read it at the time when like the newest entries were kind of coming in, and realized like, oh my gosh, going through like all the old entries, like he's not calling her by name at all. It's just kind of like the sword, the weapon, blah, blah, blah kind of thing. But eventually, at one point, he just starts to write like her name out. And that was a really cool moment where I started to realize, you know, like he's actually developing this bond with her, and maybe he doesn't even realize it, but it's kind of something that's happening slowly over time. And then you start to meet some other characters that come along with you on the journey, and they really have this really nice kind of rapport back and forth, where they're not always super nice to each other, but they start to kind of develop relationships together and kind of like bonds and whatnot there. And like an example there is one of the characters you come across is this ghost hand. And the ghost hand doesn't talk, like it speaks a ghost language, but nobody knows what it's saying except for the partner that comes with the ghost hand, which is a living candle, basically. And so the candle can understand the ghost hand's language, but no one else can. And eventually you get to a point where Elizabeth, the sword, she and the hand are having a conversation back and forth, or the hand says something, and Elizabeth is like, oh, yeah, I understand. And it basically, she's kind of answering whatever the hand is saying, and then your character, the henchman, and the candle are, like, shocked, and like, you understood what he said? Or the candle's like, you understood what Handy said? Because I think Handy is his name. And Elizabeth was like, oh, yeah, kind of, yeah. Like, I kind of know what he's talking about now. And it's this weird thing where it's like people are kind of building these bonds together and not even really realizing it just because they've been spending a lot of time together. But getting through all those different things, seeing the relationships kind of build along the way, and then getting to like the turning points where things start to really get weird in terms of like you understand, you kind of have this now like full picture of what's going on in the story, or almost full picture. It's like it keeps it pretty much up to the end, where it's like, you know, something's going on in the background. You don't know why things are going on the way that they're going, but you know that there's something kind of, some kind of darker motivation behind everything that's happening in the story. And that's kind of what really boosts this game in terms of like, man, I wish more people had played this thing, because it's got such a cool like story arc in there and like character developments that I think it's just, it's, I know in the past, right, we had the G-scale in terms of like rating games and whatnot. And a lot of times I think there's so many games out there that are being rated, and some that I'm probably never going to play, that, you know, there are some things that I think I titled as looking like a gem. And I believe I looking at the description of everything for Under Hero and kind of the gameplay and the trailers that I'd been seeing, it looked like a gem. And I think this was one of the few times that I have never been more right about a game than Under Hero itself. And to know that there's such a really amazing indie game out there that has been so underplayed is a true like gaming travesty in my mind. And it's not like a toot my horn kind of thing, like, oh, I knew this game was going to be awesome, and it totally is, but it's really like, man, I need to know of a way to really get this game out there so that people get to experience the entire thing and not just like the beginning parts, because you really need to dive further into it. And the game's not huge. I think I could beat through the game in like 9 hours or less kind of thing. I think my first playthrough took like maybe 13 hours because I'm going around trying to get all the collectibles and chests as well. But yeah, like going through like the first portion of the game, you really don't even get like a small like fraction of kind of like the deepness that the game really has. It's like reading like the first like chapter of a book, where like maybe you get some cool notes in there that's like, okay, like this might be interesting going forward, but you don't really get into it until like midway through, especially when you hit that World 4 kind of thing. And I'm not going to spoil that stuff because I really encourage people out there who have not tried it out to go play it. But yeah, if you go through and see the different things the game has to offer, like the things I try to do in a bunch of these titles is like things like talk to all the different characters, because they always have something funny to say or some kind of satire like comedy that they're talking about. And then kind of going through all those different parts and reading the different like journal entries and really like seeing the background story develop is what really kind of brings this game together and makes it such a like grand experience overall, that I think people who give it that chance will not be disappointed, or hopefully. This game, I don't think, seemed like it was going to be that huge of a thing for me, and then when I found out it was just like, wow, I just can't stop thinking about this whole experience, you know? And that brings me to the last game on this list here, which, like I mentioned, I haven't actually finished through all the way, and it's called Wandersong. Now, this game, I believe, is pretty old. I think it's one of the like Humble Bundle games that was available on the PC a long while ago and then eventually made its way over to console. I think at one point it was on Xbox Game Pass as well. I think it has since left Game Pass a few months ago. And I think total-wise, I want to say the game is like $15 or something if you choose to buy it. But this is one of those games that, like, you know, it's all about the story in this game. It's such an interesting premise where your character that you play as in the beginning, it's like you expect, like I think most games, right? You expect to go and be playing as this, like, you know, mighty hero, and you go and fight bad guys and save the world and stuff, right? And that's kind of what this satire in the game is like about, or this kind of idea in the game is about, is that like your character tries to go and do that, and in a funny kind of turn of events, you find yourself up against, and this is the very beginning of the game, it's not a spoiler, but you find yourself up against this like evil looking creature, right? And you're carrying around this sword, which looks real like large and clunky and heavy. Looks dangerous if you could wield it, but your character is so weak that he can't pick it up, and so he's kind of like dragging it along with him. And the idea is that like you go up against this bad guy who looks like this terrible monster in the beginning, You're trying to use the sword and you just can't do it. The game tells you how to swing it, and you try to swing it at the character and it just like bounces off and you just like drop it and you can't even hold it, right? And then you unlock the character's like real ability, which is singing, because your character is not this grand hero, he's a bard. And the whole idea now is that like you have this, you know, bard-like voice and kind of like jolly quality about you, and your voice is kind of your ability. And it's kind of turns this weird hero tale on its head, where now like it's all about like singing and stuff. And you end up kind of solving problems in the game mainly with your voice, mainly using your voice to kind of sing yourself out of tough situations. But there's parts in there that like, you know, really hit me super hard, like emotionally, in a good way, not in like a unfortunate way, but hard enough to the point that there were times where, especially like the very beginning scene of the game, after the whole you know, you fighting the baddie and with the sword and failing miserably and whatnot, the very first like area of the game that you have to use your voice to help the townsfolk, there I was gonna say people and folk at the same time, townsfolk, the very first area that you have to use your singing ability to kind of solve the problem of the people in the town, that one, when it reached the conclusion of that, hit me so hard that I was just like bawling. Like I was just like tears coming down my face and I couldn't even stop it, kind of thing. But I was just like, dang, man, this is like some real like heavy emotional stuff in here at times. And kind of going throughout that thing, there's a lot of really like, you know, warm, fuzzy feelings that you kind of get through the game as well. I don't want to spoil stuff because I think this is one of the times where, even though the game is on the older side, like it's a really cool experience to have firsthand. But yeah, kind of going through and seeing these warm, like fuzzy, like things going on, as well as even some of the lows in the game where you get to points and, you know, like your character is very like uncharacteristically like sad about things that are going on, and kind of seeing him like fluctuate in his like levels of happiness and whatnot was, you know, pretty well done. I think it's jarring on purpose because you're so used to him being happy, and then all of a sudden when you see him not happy, it's just like, whoa, this is like a real like low point for you, kind of thing, like in your life basically. But yeah, like seeing him kind of evolve over time is something that I really want to, or makes it something that I really want to go back and finish entirely for myself. I think I'm getting relatively close. But I think at the time there was such a bunch of like big things that were coming out, that may have been around the time I was also playing through, about to start Final Fantasy VII Remake. And that may have been the thing that kicked me off of that, track for Wandersong. But man, very, very good game. Unfortunately doesn't have a platinum trophy. But it's a pretty decent trophy list for people who are looking to just get like a quick, like 100%, or not quick, I should say, but a 100% down their belt. That is also, you know, a really great game experience. But yeah, I'm not going to say too much more about it because I don't want to spoil things. Even though I mentioned there might be some spoilers, I tried to stay away from spoiler things where I could in the different games we talked about. But I definitely, you know, on all of these 8 games that I mentioned here, because they vary very wildly in terms of, you know, going from total AAA things to indie titles that you've probably heard about or maybe even never heard about, kind of thing. I recommend all 8 of these things as experiences that I think people would really enjoy. You know, whether you are specifically one like type of like genre that you really stick with real hard, hopefully I, or you're someone more like myself that kind of delves into a lot of different genres and gameplay styles, hopefully I've had like a wide enough spread here that there's at least something for everybody in there in that list of 8. And I hope that, you know, you guys also have had like really cool gaming experiences throughout this year as well. Because I think, you know, being inside for the majority of the year and, you know, trying to live isolated from people in order to like keep them safe and keep yourself safe has been pretty tough. And games have been a really great way to kind of push our mind off of some of the more, you know, unfortunate and desolate kind of things that happened this year. And yeah, I really hope that you guys have enjoyed listening to the podcast. I've always enjoyed making it for you guys, and I think it's really cool to see that we have people listening from all over the place and coming back each week in order to kind of hear new things or hear me talking about ridiculous zany video game things. But thank you guys all for listening. It's been a really great year having you all, and I look forward to doing the same thing for you guys next year. I don't know exactly when I'll be starting back up next year. Because January 1st is on a Friday. The week of January 3rd will probably be the week that I start coming back to regular episodes again. Depending on kind of Michael's feelings and stuff, it'll be back to either some more of the solo episodes or possibly coming back to the normal style of things. But look forward. So January 3rd is a Sunday. So that week, there should be at least one or two episodes coming out then, and then kind of picking up a steady pace again after that. Hopefully, I'll also know some of the results of the board exams around that week, so we'll see. Sometimes it comes a little bit early, sometimes it'll come a little bit later. I think the latest they said would be like January 22nd or so we'll might be waiting for a little while there. But until 2021, I hope you guys continue to game on, get lots of cool experiences in there. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, or even just things that you have in mind for next year in terms of like topics you want to see covered, maybe different, you know, segments that you want to start up in the podcast that you have that you think would be pretty cool to hear on like a regular basis and stuff, I'll definitely put those into consideration as well. Because I'm looking towards the next year as kind of having some shakeups in terms of how I can like run the episodes and whatnot. I don't have a full, you know, full like list kind of, or like full draft kind of sketched out as to like how I'm going to run everything. But I'm slowly bringing ideas together, and we'll kind of see what the finished product looks like. I'm not sure if it'll be in that first week or if it'll be in like within the first month or so, but we'll see it pop up eventually, and hopefully you guys are with me along for the ride with all that. Until 2021, make sure you guys stay safe, stay healthy, take care of yourselves and your family, play some cool video games, and come on back here to talk about them with me and listen to me talk about them. But I will see you guys all next year. All the normal ways to contact myself or Michael still apply. I've got the things down in the description boxes below. brosandconsoles@gmail.com is our email. My Twitter is IndieRonan with no space, as is my PSN name. You can also find me on YouTube sometimes. I don't know how many new things I'll have there, because I'll be taking a little bit of a break from, you know, content releasing and stuff until next year. But yeah, if you're checking out some of my older videos on YouTube, it is Indie Ronan over there with a space. But look forward to talking with everybody next year. Peace out and cheers, everybody.